Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, where we talk with martial arts practitioners about their histories and the influence that their practice of martial arts has on their lives. You are listening to the free version of this podcast, which is abbreviated. Help support this program by considering to subscribe to us on Patreon, where you will get 4 full-length podcasts each month, 1 week before the YouTube release date. The cost is that of about 1 coffee shop coffee per month. Go to www.patreon.com/malmag to subscribe. That is www.patreon.com/malmag. If you would like to purchase single full-length episodes of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, visit our Gumroad page at malmag.gumroad.com, and that is malmag.gumroad.com. In this episode, I sit down on Zoom with St. Louis-based martial artist Matt Stumpf. Matt is a martial arts instructor, but also a school teacher who uses martial arts in his gym class. Let's find out more. Sit back and enjoy.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, how are you, sir?
Good, buddy. Hey, I wore your shirt today.
Oh, thank you so much.
Even though we're not being video recorded, you know, I just figured you'd see me anyway, so.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you.
Of course. Welcome to the Martial Art Lifestyle Podcast. And as you just heard, I'm talking to a friend of mine from the Inosanto family who is a school teacher, adaptive PE teacher, as I just found out. We're on Zoom and he's sitting in his really nice looking studio, I have to say, by the way. This is my first time being able to see it. And this is Matt Stumpf. And again, I've been looking forward to talking to him for a long time, just not only because he's an incredible martial artist and an amazing human being, but his profession is one of these that I think is going to lend to a very interesting conversation when it comes to martial arts. So anyway, welcome to the show, Matt.
Thanks so much for having me out, sir. You know, I appreciate it. I will just tell you, I appreciate you having me on here. And I hope it's good for the listeners. And I've always enjoyed all of our conversations at the Academy and outside and things like that. I just appreciate you guys being so open to me all the time.
Of course. So let's hopefully get you back on track to where you were. You were just discussing your job.
So a few years back, I've been a special education teacher for 15 years, which I think is it's a really fun job. I love doing it. Love doing special ed. And probably about 3 years ago, as just an education, so I'm going to go back a second. Sometimes in education, you don't always know what you're going to teach the next year, right? So every once in a while, and Guru talks about that all the time, where every once in a while, you'll get kind of like a call in the office and they'll say, hey, I'm going to need you to teach, you know, fourth grade, you know, which is pretty common sometimes. And so what ended up happening was I looked down at my schedule a few years ago and it said adaptive PE. And I go, well, what the heck is adaptive PE? I've never done this before in my life. So about 3 or 4 years ago. And it was essentially teaching physical education to kids with special needs. Now, as a special education teacher, I was used to bringing in different pieces of my martial arts into the curriculum. So when I've taught, so to give you a little more background, as a special education teacher, I've taught resource, I've taught self-contained, emotionally disturbed students. That was kind of like the biggest chunk of my career. And so that at this time, I'm teaching self-contained, emotionally disturbed kids, and I was bringing in Heaven 6 and training Filipino martial arts with pool noodles as a way of kind of promoting a little bit of mindfulness, a little bit of respect. What I love about martial art training is that you're communicating a lot to people. Most of our communication really is nonverbal. It's our tone of voice, our body language, our posture, our eye contact. And so with the emotionally disturbed students that I was teaching, I really felt like they benefited from it. I noticed that a lot of my reading scores would go up with the kids. The way the children taught each other was different. And I had one of the best experiences. So maybe if she's hearing this or something like that, but one of my assistants, her name was Chris Bubenheim. And she was just a fantastic individual to work with. really showed a lot of care and a lot of concern for the kids. And she thought, when I told her, hey, I think I want to do this Filipino martial arts in our self-contained class, she was extremely supportive, but she'd never seen what it was. And what was interesting to me is she watched me teach probably about 5 or 6 kids. And I had this model of teaching it where I would teach 2 or 3 kids. And then the next group of kids that would come in, I would have those kids teach the new kids. So they're not necessarily doing it with me, because this way you're building a leadership culture, but then you're also forcing that student to be giving, because you have to be giving in order to teach anything. You have to be giving. So Chris is watching me, you know, teach this, and she never did any of it. Never picked up the pool noodles, never did any of this. And it was so funny. A kid came in and was looking at it and got kind of frustrated, didn't want to do it. She picked the pool noodles up and taught him having sex, did it perfect. And afterwards, I go, how did you know how to do having sex? I've never taught you, I've never seen you practice it. And she looked right at me and just very, 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 very coolly said, well, Matt, I watch, I pay attention, and then I do what I see. And I thought, man, that just taught me so much about teaching martial arts and learning about how to convey that, not just the information, but the confidence to people, especially children with special needs. So anyway, I was doing that in the self-contained classroom. And like I said, I felt like it really was helping the student culture. And then I get this call to be an adaptive PE teacher. Now, I've never taught adaptive PE. And I review the IEPs and I look and I see a wide range of identifications with the kids. A lot of them have, especially with kids that are high need special ed, a lot of times they're very sedentary children. So they're sitting a lot, they're looking at screens a lot, they're not physically active. And so their willingness to try things can be kind of reserved. You know, the willingness to try things can just be kind of hindered a little bit, because for a lot of reasons, because it's very hard to be vulnerable physically. So I decided I was going to do a demonstration to this kids, and I bring out my pool noodles and I show them just a basic ikis. I just do basic ikis. And I show him a few things, and I said, you know, Mr. Stumps, I go, how many of you know who Bruce Lee is? And about half of the kids raise their hand. They know who Bruce Lee is. I said, well, you know, Mr. Stumps, martial art instructor, who's really good friends with Bruce Lee. And he taught me how to do this, and I'd love to share this with you guys. And so their response to it was very, very humbling, and they were very, very excited to do it. And it became a part of our class culture, Tim. We ended up doing it every single week. We called it sensory. So I didn't want to call it martial arts. I called it sensory. And these kids started doing it. And I was so shocked at how more verbal they became doing it. I can't say any of the kids' names kind of on here because of confidentiality issues.
Right, of course.
But one of the caseworkers just verbalized to me that the oral spoken words of some of the students in some cases went up double and sometimes triple the data for the goals. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a really, really neat experience. It was a really, really neat experience. So then I did that for 2 years, which was super, you know, super exciting. And then all of a sudden I got a whole new job change. And then I'm teaching resource science. And then I have what we call an academic lab. And I got this academic lab of four girls who are not my demographic, not what I'm used to teaching. And so I kind of did my same kind of spiel, and I had mentioned to them that I'd like to do this. And one of the girls told me, they said, "Well, hey, I heard a rumor that you were on TED Talk." I said, "Yeah, I was on a TED Talk. I was at UCLA. I talked about this stuff." And she said, "Okay, you know, we'll try it." And it became like a part of our class culture. Everybody that came in the room had to learn Heaven Six. And to me, one of my favorite just kind of events. It was very, sorry, I get a little emotional with this stuff, because I think when you teach children, especially children that have either been through trauma or children that have been through certain events in their lives, they're very apprehensive of trying things physically with somebody new, you know? And so a couple of kids in the class that was like, I'll practice this, but I don't want to practice this with you. And I said, that's completely fine. You know, you have that right. I just appreciate you being a positive part of my classroom. And I was shocked because I remember driving away and thinking to myself, I don't know if this is going to catch on this year. It caught on with the adaptive PE kids, but I don't know if this is going to really catch on the same way. And I was so shocked at how it landslided that anytime a new kid would come into my classroom, the children who were the most apprehensive, the least excited about doing it were the ones that were the most excited to share this stuff with other people. So it was just kind of a neat thing to make that kind of a part of my class culture. So, you know, Sorry, I kind of went around a lot in that conversation.
No, that's actually, you know, that is kind of what I want to say, the meat and potatoes of the types of things that I like to get into.
Yeah.
And the impact of martial arts in the profession or in the life, you know, in life that you're finding. I mean, we'll get back to your history, obviously, but that is such an incredible story. And it's one of the things that I think many of us talk about in martial arts. And I think we can kind of maybe put this to words. And it's the idea of, you know, you've got some students there that are, trust obviously is a huge issue.
Right.
Right. And there's a thing about trust being a big issue in martial arts. Why do people maybe gravitate to certain types of training and not to others? And then we can even break that down into why do they gravitate to certain instructors? Why do they gravitate to certain classes, this sort of thing? And because there's such a variety in it, it's like you probably, you know, you've been at this a long time. You know what types of instructors you gravitate to. You know what types of training partners you gravitate to. And I think if you would be like, if your approach would have been like many that we know out there, you would have gotten a complete turnoff from those kids. But you knew better. That's not the approach to bring in to them anyway. And I think one of the things that a lot of us like to get from, or love that we get from our particular family of martial art. And for me, what I really love is people like yourself, and many of these other people I know that come in, and I see you guys multiple times a year, you know, at least once a year, if not multiple times a year, is the bonding, the sitting down and that getting to know people, getting that trust with people, because we're about to swing a stick at each other's head. We're about to punch at each other, or in the most uncomfortable confines, we're about to lay down on the ground and put each other in locks or smash each other on the ground.
Right.
Which is why I think, you know, that's the big thing you hear about in art, like jujitsu or wrestling, is I don't want these sweaty stranger people. And I totally understand. I totally get it. That's an art that takes probably a lot longer if you're in that mindset. Some people are perfectly fine with it already, but you know, if you're in that trust mindset, where you need trust, and I do too. I'm a big guy. I'm capable of defending myself, but I still don't. I'm making myself vulnerable anytime I'm looking to train, especially something new. And you don't want to be hurt. You don't want to be put in compromised positions where you're like, okay, you know, is this person? Because you know, as much as we say or we hope, obviously in the Inosanto lineage, that there's no passage of rights and there's no hazing. Martial arts traditionally has that, and you know, we look at it in a nice way, like, okay, yeah, you have to sit outside for 4 days in the rain before you get in the Shaolin temple, this sort of thing. And it's like, yeah, but that's not exactly, that makes good TV. The hazing tends to be a bit more brutal in some styles and systems. And yeah, it's drifted away from maybe sitting in a horse stance all day. I mean, those martial arts still exist, but you know, we see it online with people, you know, lining guys up and smacking them all in the head. And they're like, oh, this is contact training. You're like, no, this is idiocy. This is hazing, picky people, you know? So, you know, that you're able to take some of the more vulnerable groups who are already, you know, have trust issues and able to cross that line. And it seems like where you had success with this, and this is the amazing part, is the person saying, okay, well, maybe I've got some issues in trusting you, and that's mine, and I'll work through that. But maybe to the next person, how about you trust me?
Right.
To show you, and that helps build their confidence too.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's
a pretty magical thing, really.
You know, and I'm pretty lucky because I think that that mindset for me was cultivated during my during my time working in youth corrections. I actually worked in I started my career working corrections for juveniles, and my coordinator, my first supervisor, was a woman named Audrey Helfrich, and she was very much a guru-ish kind of person, but very much one of the things that I've always kind of liked about Guru is he usually does a few things in his stories when you listen to his stories. And one of his common themes I always kind of see is he's looking for those kind of outside the box stories that I think are very appealing. And then also too, I think Guru, and what makes him a great teacher, is he accepts that not every path is a straight line. And if you're honest with yourself, most paths aren't. And I remember Audrey was very much a guru-ish kind of person for me. And I had never really worked in corrections, hadn't done anything. To be honest, I took the job because I needed it. You know, it's like it's your first job out of college. And I ended up interviewing in this facility. And I thought, well, okay, I guess I'm going to work here. And what I thought was interesting was my first day in corrections, we spent doing team building exercises for 3 days with each other. Because she said, you have to learn how you guys are going to react to each other during your disappointments. But the other thing that I thought was really profound is she would plan bicycle rides. And we took 27 kids who had like felony convictions and rode on a bicycle from Kansas City to St. Louis. I mean, how many other people?
Yeah. That's across the state of Missouri. That's not like a little day trip.
That's right. And she did this, and she said, because they have to build physical confidence. And that was a big thing that she kind of built into me was early on. I started to notice that what happens is when humans go through something physical together, and that doesn't necessarily mean that we all have to do a 50-mile run together, but when we do something like we plan like a small trip together, or we just go on like a mile walk, we learn something about each other that's not verbal, right? And if you plan, the more intense you plan it, the deeper that friendship bond starts to become with those other people. And I noticed that there became a bond with those kids that had ridden across the state. Then there was a bond with me. Because I had to, you have to tell them, hey, you know, you're going to have to dig deep. You're going to have to do some things that you're not always comfortable with. It's just like in jujitsu. And I started doing jujitsu at Gracie Maida probably 4 years ago. And those have been some of the closest, best relationships I've had in the martial arts. And you always think to yourself that, you know, that you're going to do it in one community, but being vulnerable, being an instructor in Guru's stuff for so long and getting to enjoy a certain amount of, you know, success, and, you know, you're doing well and enjoying it and teaching classes, going and all of a sudden feeling not successful and then being put in positions where you're tapping all the time and not knowing the game physically at all. It's such a different physical game. I developed a lot of friendships from those people. I specifically remember my one of the coaches at Umaida, Ann Neeb, is such a fantastic technician. And to watch her explain techniques, I became a better instructor just watching her teach and watching my professor JW talk about different concepts. He was very guru-ish, you know, for, and so I think that like that success comes from that a lot of kids might not want to feel vulnerable, but see, I really do believe deep down somewhere people want to feel success. They have, we want, there's a reason why grades impact us. When people say, you know, words never hurt me, I don't believe that. Words do hurt. Or if words didn't hurt, people wouldn't fight over it. And when you start to feel that confidence, that success, and you feel that you can be successful in something physically, that just does so many great things for kids. And I'm really lucky that I had a mentor like that at the beginning of my career, where she was, we took the kids, like I said, across the state of Missouri. We went down into the Missouri boot heel and she did rock climbing. we're doing rock climbing. And I'm sitting there, she was telling me what she's going to do. She goes, we're going to take these kids down and we're going to do a rock climbing. I go, what the hell? I'm thinking, like, what is wrong with you? What do you mean we're going to rock climb?
Yeah.
And she goes, you watch, Matt. She goes, this is going to build their confidence. And I'm really glad that I started my career with that, because what it kind of gave me was that green light to say, you know what? These kids want to feel the same success. And these kids want to feel like they can do something. And to start my last year, I said, like, with the four kids I had, who were just, all four of them were just outstanding students. And for them to embrace doing Filipino martial arts, and the way they would talk about it with other people, they didn't verbalize as martial arts. They would call it a funky brain thing. And it was really interesting, was all of them would admit to me that the concentration level was higher, that their ability to focus increased. A lot of kids told me that it calmed them down, and it became kind of a neat, talking piece, a conversation piece for a lot of kids, you know.
That's funny, because when COVID hit and we had to take everything outside, you know, we've got that, fortunately at the academy, we have that really nice big parking lot. So that's, you know, we enjoy being inside right now, but we kind of wish we had the outside space inside. So we had a little more physical space in which to do some of the things we were doing outside, which involved a lot of the Krupi Gabron, which we are doing, but we could actually run it, you know, a bit more, more stuff. And because the kids got involved in the Kali more at that time, Gru Dan has asked me that in Saturday when I teach the class, that I keep up the Kali with them. So, you know, I've got, it's funny thing about Saturday becomes this, I actually get a pretty good group for a Saturday morning. You know, I can't imagine my parents getting me up to a place by 9 a.m. on a Saturday to take a class where I'd be like, nope, that's Bugs Bunny time, you know, Bugs Bunny and Bowl of Cereal. But regardless, here we are with, you know, a pretty good group of kids. And I've got a lot of ones that are younger, I'd say, than the average weekly class. And then some of the other kids come as well. But, you know, I get a lot of the 5, 4, and 5, and 6-year-olds in there. And so I get them swinging sticks, and I've got them now where Heaven 6 is coming along pretty darn well with a lot of them.
That's and great.
I keep, you know, promising the parents, I'm like, this will make them better at school.
Yes.
And they go, okay. And I'm like, seriously, no, there's some documentation on this, and there's a lot of maybe anecdotal stuff, but I said a lot of people I know that are working with different people have found this to be very good for the mind.
I think as time goes on, Tim, and I'm glad you're sharing that story, because I feel like as time goes on, education at some point, I don't know when it's going to happen. I'm not a predictor, but I think that at some point education is going to take a turn to embracing that physical learner, because people forget about that, you know, that when you're teaching children, you have those kids who have a strong visual sense, and then have the kids that have that strong verbal sense. But when you have a physical learner, those are those kids that are always kind of moving like this, and they're having a real hard time sitting still. And so then as an educator, and one of the big pitfalls that we have in education is we start to look and think, well, that really well-behaved kid and that really quiet kid who's well-behaved, that's your smart kid. That's the smartest kid in class because they're behaving. And that's not always the case. You know, we tell ourselves that story quite a bit because we want to hear heard. We want to be heard. A lot of individuals want to know that they're being heard. And when you get a physical learner on the scene, a lot of times they're very gifted, but they don't always know how to make the instructor in any field feel that they've been heard. And I think that that's where, you know, for me, I think that the Sinawali really helps, because you can't do it and not concentrate, you know?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to be present in it. Yeah.
Right. You got to be present. And it's one of the only things that I've ever seen where it's one of the only things that I've ever seen where you can start to put it into another context. And it's still valid. It's, there's so many great transitions in Heaven Six. There's so many great, just transitions of the shapes that you're forming when you're doing the movements that, that to me, it's helped me in so many different things. You know, it's helped me in so many different fields. You know, I see it in jujitsu all the time. I'm like, oh, here's, here's where, you know, it, it might look like an arm drag to somebody else. I'm like, oh, this is another way I could be doing Sinawali. Here's my forehand, forehand transition. There's my forehand, forehand come underneath backhand. Like that, that's the stuff that helps me with those other things that are a little more difficult. And I think that, you know, for kids that are not very visual and maybe not very verbal, having that physical outlet that forces the concentration, I think is a powerful tool. And I think at some point, education is going to take a shift in that direction. At least I hope.
And this concludes the abbreviated version of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast. Please click the like and subscribe buttons, as well as the notification bell. Also consider subscribing to the full-length podcast at www.patreon.com/malmag or purchasing individual full-length episodes at malmag.gumroad.com. Thank you for listening to this episode with Matt Stumpf. Coming up next week, I've got a visitor from across the pond. UK's Jackie Rayner sits down in Marina Del Rey with me for a podcast. Check out the Malmag store at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and click on the store tab. There, you will find a full selection of Timmy B's brand sticks for FMA and Kirby Kerbong, as well as Timmy B's and Dos Manos t-shirts. Many more products coming soon. Also, click on our courses tab to purchase online courses, right now featuring a course in the Dos Manos stick of FMA. More courses to come. This show is produced by Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine. Visit us at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and enjoy the free version of our online magazine with articles, a recommended schools page, and a worldwide events calendar. Music by Jack L. Relic. Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine and the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast are trademarked and copyrighted by TNT LLC.